Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Yo, 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 yo seventh generation. Our ancestors and elders took special care in their decision making to ensure us a prosperous future. Respect and honor towards our elders. We hold the truth, the secrets, the lessons of life, and of our past. Ourselves properly in accordance to the ancient ways that have been entrusted to us. We preserve our strength for you through words, through songs, through our dance. We show our love for you.
Seventh Generation, a song by Haudenosaunee singer-songwriter Howard Lyons from his Sound of America recording CD entitled Spirit Walk. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices on Radio for Peace International. RFPI is Global Community Radio. In today's Wolf Mountain program, we are very honored to share a visit with one of the finest Native writers, educator, and scholar activist in Indian country, Professor Gabe Horn. In addition to serving on Yat Kiddushi Native Center's Advisory Council, Gabe is a close personal friend to Betty and I. We are brothers in spirit and brothers in honoring Mother Earth and our Indigenous movement. We first met 10 years ago, while both of us were speakers at a Native conference focusing on the true history and legacy of Christopher Columbus during the so-called Columbus Quincentenary. Over the years, our hearts grow strong together, sharing ceremony and working together on projects to defend Sacred Mother Earth, for Native rights, and for social justice. Gabe Horn and I also share a similar history of experiences growing up in the Indian movement, which makes me proud of him as a brother warrior. Listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio have heard me praise his fine book, Native Heart, An American Indian Odyssey, published by New World Library. I again urge everyone who cares about the Native struggle and who wishes an insight into what many fine AIM brothers and sisters went through, read Gabe's book, Native Heart. Professor Horn is a nationally known writer. In addition to Native Heart, Gabe wrote a four-book Native People, Native Ways series entitled The Native American Book of Wisdom, Book of Life, Book of Change, and Book of Knowledge. These are excellent writings for all ages, published by Beyond Words Press. Professor Horn authored the fine book, Contemplations of a Primal Mind, published by the University of Florida Press. Listeners to our Wolf Mountain broadcasts have also heard the 8-program series audio literature presentation of the book, Wisdom Keepers, Meetings with Native American Spiritual Elders, by authors Harvey Arden and Steve Wall. That beautiful book, published by Beyond Words Press, was edited by our program guest, my brother Gabe Horn. Last but certainly not least, Gabe's latest work, The Book of Ceremonies, A Native Way of Honoring and Living the Sacred, is a very special and precious literature published by New World Library. The beautiful illustrations in this book of ceremonies was drawn by his very talented artist son, Carissus Horn. As a special treat for our listeners to honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, my brother Gabe Horn gifted us a newly released CD that features excerpts from his book of ceremonies, which he also gave me permission to include in our interview in air on Radio for Peace International. This beautiful CD includes selections read by the author, Gabe Horn, accompanied by music from our friend, Dennis Harrison. Listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio have also heard the beautiful song, Free Peltier, written by Dennis, from the Songs for Justice Project CD, which Betty and I are proud to be a part of, along with Gabe Horn, Ted Williams, and Diana Osborne. We will share that special Free Peltier song later on during the interview with my brother, Gabe Horn. Before we continue with our interview, and as an honor to Gabe and his beautiful family, we begin with an audio excerpt from the Book of Ceremonies CD entitled Ceremony of the Story. Thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinawantakwasin.
What is magic, if not the world? What is the world, if not magic? It has been said that from the edge of night she first saw him, tall and naked on the sand, newborn of the ocean, newborn of dawn. His gray skin glistened in an aqueous light, and his blowhole covered in foam engulfed the cool wind that circled and nested upon his head. She watched as he untangled the algae from his long raven hair, from his smooth belly and lithe sex, and she smiled as he timidly stepped his first steps. This was the most magnificent being the moon had ever seen, and although time had come for her to make way for the sun, a new feeling, more powerful than any other she had ever felt since her origin of her dance in the night sky, left her poised on the horizon. She summoned all the strength that remained in her round, full form, and with a waning light, she touched him and turned the gray of his skin forever into a bright copper brown. He turned, his gaze holding her in suspense, just as she held the luminescent tide. The moon knew then that she had been born to be two or none, and she longed for a mouth with which to kiss him, arms and legs with which to embrace him, breasts with which to nurse him, and a womb with which to shelter him, like the endless couples who nestled upon the earth, comforted beneath the blanket of the moon's silver light, night after night. Finally, when the sun became too fierce for the moon to remain in the morning sky, she faded away with the image of the glorious man-dolphin wandering in the sand, consuming her innermost being, and she fell asleep so that she could dream and thus be with the one she loved. And in her sleep, she dreamed that she awakened. He searched the dunes with new eyes, naked, confused, afraid. Nothing was he as he had foreseen. Only the stars reminded him of that place which was not this place, of that time which was not this time, when after emerging from the water he would see the lights of the sacred village fires wavering deep in the forest as the old ones had taught him the ceremony of the stars. They said that along the tree line he would find clothes, that he should dress while the moon set under the star quilt of the night, and conceal the blowhole at the top of his head with a colorful turban of her corn silk hair. They told him not to be afraid, as the drum of his heart, pounding as though it were the heart of all humanity, merged with the drums of the forest. Yet now, on the night of the fall equinox, the only lights he sees along the coast do not flicker from sacred fires, but radiate a flat, lifeless glow over a world without forest, where scant palm trees cower around inert monoliths of stone that violate the very body of the mother. Even the stars from the sacred darkness of the father have lost their splendor in this unimagined world of chaotic, alien vibrations, a world gone koyaanisqatsi. And the sounds he hears come not from the drums in the forest, but from the strikes of his own frightened heart, emanating through the top of his vulnerable blowhole. While he removes the algae from his body and takes his first unsteady steps upon the wet sand, soft, familiar light touches him. Its caress changes the hue of his skin from gray to a luminous bronze. The man, who was once a dolphin, gazes into the heavens, and there he sees her, waning on the horizon, round, still radiant. Her warmth awakens a comforting stir at the pit of his stomach, a sensation that assures him all is indeed in accordance with the ritual that initiated his rebirth as man, the ritual of the need. A silent prayer of gratitude issues from his lips. A few miles away, in a small apartment by the bay, a young woman awakes to the sound of her pounding heart. She sits on the edge of her bed with eyes still closed, entranced by the echo of a dream in which she was the moon who swam with a dolphin. Together they played in the ocean, she a silver light who illumined the deep dark waters, he a graceful dancer upon her glorious stage. And when they embraced, the only light left in the world was in the dolphin's eyes, wherein she saw reflected the human form that the moon had chosen so as to love him fully. In his eyes, the young mystified woman had seen the image of her own self. She lays back in bed, startled by the moist sheets beneath her, by the wetness of her own body. She stares absently at the ceiling, and as her eyes slowly adjust to the dark, starlit room, she feels as though another consciousness inhabits her, blissfully exploring her body with her own hands, pausing in the warmest curves, repeating the same pass over and over, discovering by touch the places where the skin was strong and firm, and where it was soft and hidden from daylight, where on the throat the heartbeat pulsed, and beneath the taut breath, the breath roared, where the nerve shivered as her hands approached her yielding center of sensation. Ancient memories unfold before her eyes now, carrying her to another place and another time. She sees herself surrounded by other young women whose painted faces are moonflowers, glowing around a central fire. Their dark eyes sparkle with promise and reflect the beauty of the encompassing circle of men who beat upon their drums, shake their rattles, play their flutes, and call out his secret name into the moonless night. For the lover is ready, and love must be fulfilled. They say that in the 3 months that followed, The moon gradually disappeared from the night sky, causing much havoc and confusion. With no one to guide them, the tides rebelled, swallowing coastlines or uncovering mile after mile of reef. Women missed their cycles, creating a great imbalance in the wheel of birth and death. Scientists and mystics alike turned mute, ashamed at their inability to explain the unprecedented catastrophe. Lovers had to find refuge in other less romantic lights, and everywhere people prepared for the end of existence as they knew it. An enormous cloud of fear smothered the entire planet. But in a small, remote pocket of the Earth, a shaman, after spending 5 days in the other world, remembered what others had long forgotten. "The Dolphin Man is back," said the Old One to his people. "The moon is in love, and we must help her find her lover." And so, guided by his vision and by his love for the mystery, the first people held ceremonies for their union night after night. They sang songs that they thought had been washed away by time, and they danced dances they could barely recall, all to help the woman who was the moon and the man who was a dolphin bring their love to fruition. And as they lit their sacred fires and beat their sacred drums, the ceremony of the story began to unfold once again. A man stands alone on the shore of the Gulf of Mexico, making his offering to the frightened sea that until recently had been his home. As the sun sets, he speaks silently, assuring the tide that its beloved mistress would soon be back. But the mystery had just granted him a dream. He tells the waters how in his dream a young woman poured love into his heart. And from that love, a spirit was conceived that would set all things back into the sacred magic way of the mystery. "In my dream," he said, "the spirits of dolphins, the spirits of stars, the spirits of the ancestors gathered in what seemed like a great celebration that focused on a beautiful infant who swam through the crystal light of a sacred world. All the while she swam, a shaman's song filled the watery air with magic, and the hearts of everyone filled with joy, and the essence of love filled all things." At his bare feet, the waves murmured the beginning of the song of night. Elsewhere, the drums signaled the start of the ceremony. Inside her small apartment, she, who was once a young woman, hears and recognizes a song. She had been hearing these same drums and these same voices since the start of autumn. Bit by bit, they had awakened her until tonight, when she finds her felt fully awake. In preparation for her lover, she combs her rich black hair, dons a necklace of precious coral, several bracelets of quetzal feathers, and a silver dress woven from the night of her eager heart. Guided by the song, the moon leaves in pursuit of her destiny. She approaches the man while he looks out over the darkened sea. The silence is as deep and immense as the night beyond them. Even before he faces her, the moon feels the power of his gaze, unveiling the secrets of her innermost being. He turns, and all the light of the world is in his eyes. Inside them, she sees the Pleiades and the sacred fires of the Old Ones. As they fill with tears, she sees reflected the beautiful woman whom she has chosen in order to love him more fully. The man who was once a dolphin feels his heart expanding as though it were the heart of all humanity. While he contemplates the woman before him, his bowl opens wide beneath his many braids, and the drum in his chest blends with the drums of the ceremony. Words pour from their eyes. That night, the winter solstice, on a beach too cold for even the bravest of souls, A naked man and woman rest upon the lap of their mother, drunk with the intimate elixir of their love. All of life celebrates this blessed union, for out of its sensuous purity, a magical being has been conceived. And as the three of them sleep, the full moon returns to the night sky and shines warmth upon their dreams and magic upon the hearts of all beings who share the potential to love. And the shaman sings, "So it was, and so it is, and so it will forever be."
That beautiful narrative we just heard was entitled Ceremony of the Story, an excerpt from the Book of Ceremonies CD by Professor Horn, my guest today on Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. We now continue in program 4 of my interview with my warrior brother, Gabe Horn. Another very important concern and subject that you and I have talked about for many years is really another aspect of colonialism, actually another type of aspect of genocide, and that is the colonial government's forced efforts to define whom we are as indigenous peoples and to try to categorize and classify us has gotten to the point where we Native American people, so-called Indians, are almost like cattle or dogs requiring ID tags to wear around us. And it's also become, to a certain extent, in some quarters of Indian country, fashionable to flash a so-called ID card as if to be boastful and proud that at one point in time some of your relatives were under the authority of the U.S. Cavalry, where we were forced through our history, through the military, as well as through the missionaries, as well as, of course, through such things as the Dawes Act, Congressman Dawes from so-called Commonwealth of Massachusetts effort to basically try to do away with Native people, forced us to be so-called enrolled Indians, so-called federally recognized Indians. And most listeners to this program know that I never allow myself to be called a so-called U.S. Indian. I am a Wabanaki person, and I'm going to just ask my friend here, my guest, to comment on what I consider to be a real absurd situation that's going on, and that's been going on for quite some time, and that is this nonsense over who is Indian and so-called identification cards.
It takes me back to an article I read by Ward Churchill, who I think is an awesome scholar. And it was an article about that happened to a Native American activist and one of the strong hearts of the American Indian movement, a man named Jimmy Dorham, who was also an artist. And what I read, and I read Jimmy Dorham's poetry, and man, it's like stone Indian to me. He his art was actually taken out of an Indian art exhibit because he didn't have authenticity. A card of a certification of authenticity. He wasn't a card-carrying Indian, in other words. He wasn't certified by the government or the tribal government. So his art was actually taken out of a Native American. This is a person who, to me, from reading his work, was Indian all the way. And then I read also in Churchill's article that a Cherokee demographer had stated that if blood quantums is a way of identifying Indians, then by the year 2080, we will be extinct. Just put that aside for a moment, and let's just think of it this way. The American Indian Movement Center in Minneapolis is named after my wife's mother, my mother-in-law, my children's grandmother. The American Indian Movement Center in Minneapolis. And yet, there are people who call themselves AIM, who challenge Indian people by demanding they present a card of authenticity to display their art. Now, I understand that there are people who will sell Indian designs and Indian things and say they're Indian or whatever, and I know all kinds of things go on in this world. But my children do not have a card that identifies them as an official United States Indian. My children, the grandchildren of the woman who the American Indian Movement Center is named after in Minneapolis, are not enrolled. Does that mean that they're not Indians? The hell it does. Now I said to them, I said, do you want to get enrolled? That's your choice. Do you want to be defined that way? That is your choice. But that is not how you define yourselves as I have taught you. It's how you live your life. It's how you pray. It's how you treat other people. What is an Indian? It boils down to that. Some people say an Indian comes from India. Well, okay, we can get into that argument about what is native, what is Indian, what we should call ourselves. And we can get all, we can use that as a distraction from what's, what are the real issues. But it's how we look at ourselves. Can I go up to somebody and say, you're not an Indian, if that person claims he's an Indian? Do I have that right? I don't believe I do. But I believe in time, that person's heart and that person's actions will reveal themselves to me. And I'll be able to tell by the way that person lives how I regard that person. But to use a government and a card and to claim that we're Indians because we are graced and blessed with Indian blood and rely on that as what makes us Indians, I think is absurd. What makes a Jew a Jew? It's his beliefs. That's what makes us, I believe, Indians. It's one drop of Indian blood, as my Uncle Nip would say, is so powerful it could overpower anything Europe ever produced when it's in our blood. You know, we look at Quanah Parker. He had a white mother, Chief Joseph, John Ross. The list goes on. What were they, half Indian? Quarter Indians? 1/16th Indians? Or were they Cherokees? Were they Comanches? Were they Nez Perce? I think it goes back to what we originally taught those kids in the Ames Revival Schools of all places. When we had them stand up and say, okay, how much Indian are you? Well, I'm 1/4. How much are you? I'm 5/8. How much are you? I'm 1/16. How much are you? And we all of a sudden we would start to laugh and we'd see all these kids standing up and everybody knew their percent of blood. And we'd ask the one who said they were half because that was the most convenient and this is what was done to me. Gabriel, which half of you is Indian, which half of you ain't? Is it your upper half or your lower half? Is it your front half or your back half, kid? And I kind of felt stupid. I actually was thinking of pointing somewhere, but I didn't know where to point. Gabriel, close your eyes. Close my eyes. What does your heart say you are? Indian. That's what you are, kid. You are either you are an Indian or you're not. You can't be part this or part that, kid. And that's the mentality, and that's what you said, that's where the genocide comes in. And plus you get, and you break Native people down in percents of blood, and then of course you throw a few bucks out there and say, well, if you're half Indian, you get this much money, if you're Indian, sorry, you don't get any, but you gotta be half Indian from this reservation, and not, well, I'm half Indian, but I'm not half Indian from this reservation, because my mother was born there, well, I'm sorry, you don't qualify for these bucks. And that's what the bottom line usually goes down to. It usually goes down to money and funding and things like that, and man, when we fall into that, you know, we've taken the bait, you know, we're chasing the green frog skin. So what makes us Indian, you know, what makes us authentic, you know, just, I don't know. I can't be concerned about what makes you Indian. I can only be concerned about what makes me Indian and how I teach my children and how I live my life. But don't you go telling me what I am and what I'm not. And don't go telling me that if I don't have a card in my pocket or my children don't have a card in their pockets that they're not Indians or they're not qualified to display their art as American Indians or Native Americans or Anishinaabes, whatever, however they refer to themselves. Because I don't see what traditional precedent is that. When did our people ever do that to each other? I don't even recall there was a name for white people. We called people by the way they behaved, not by the color of their skin as a people. It was usually by the way they acted. And so what about our sovereignty? What about those people who are... I have a brother who was taken in by a tribe, and he's accepted. He's accepted as a medicine person, as a matter of fact, in that tribe. What's with our sovereignty? They accept him that way.
So we can't espouse sovereignty in one way and then say sovereignty, you know, no, you know, am I Indian on paper? If I have to prove I'm Indian on paper, I could dig up something. But who should I prove this to? Who do I have to prove this to? And if I have to prove this to anybody, I don't think so. I am who I am and how I live my life. You know, and I know there are going to be people who exploit and who do those things, and I'm always looking at myself, what are my motives? But you see, I think it also goes down to this, brother. I went and saw the vision. I didn't get it at the time that I sought it, but I got the vision. And it showed me how to live my life. And that's how I live my life. So if what I'm doing is relating to that vision, then I know that I'm doing the right thing, and I know that I'm on the right path. And that's how I know. So that's how I reevaluate myself. And so if I think there's ego involved in this, then I have to look, does it relate to my vision? Now, do these people who demand a card from you, or a card from your wife, or a card from your nieces or your nephews or whatever, have they had a vision, and is this what their vision teaches them to do? That would be a hell of a vision.
People throughout the world share is our concern for future generations, and many listeners to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices have heard me and many other express our concept of our law, of how our thoughts and actions affect seven generations in the future, that just our everyday way of life is predicated on caring for Mother Earth, sharing our food and our home, concept of being concerned for how Mother Earth will be in the future, raising our young people to have care
to be responsible, because we know that all life is sacred, that all our relations, all the animals and plants, water beings, part of our family, that they have a future. So we talk a lot about seven generations. And there are times, as a native journalist, as a native ecologist, that I'm very disturbed and saddened by what I've seen in my time here on Mother Earth, the destruction of the environment, the desecration of sacred lands, the misuse and abuse of many good things from many cultures. But I try to look at it from a different perspective, from like a giant oak tree that has lived many winters, and try to think about the future generations. And when I can do that, I try to be hopeful and try to look at things in a good way for the well-being of Mother Earth in the future. Would you please talk about the great law of the seven generations and your feelings and views, attitudes, concerns about the future?
Three things came to my mind. One of them was very recently at the Republican convention. I don't know the name of the man who stood up at the podium in front of this large gathering. He made a statement. He said that it's about time, and this is pretty close to his words, that we care more about jobs than insects and birds, or something, trees and birds or something. I believe he got a standing ovation, or an ovation. The place exploded with applause. It brought me back to a time that I was touring the Northwest, and I was one of these Land Rovers, you know, four-wheel drives, and we're going through the back roads of the mountains, and I was with a family. It had been a few years after Mount St. Helens explosion, and I saw the mountains were just devastated. Everywhere I looked, it looked like an atomic bomb had gone off. And I said, my gosh, is this what Mount St. Helens did? And the driver turned around and said to me, nope, it's logging. I know the cry out there at that time was against the spotted owl, because the environmental movement had gotten the chance to use the spotted owl as an endangered species to protect the trees. Interesting, huh? Owl leads us through darkness. How the loggers and the logging corporations would sponsor T-shirts and wear them, and bumper stickers with a target and an owl in the middle of the target. I think that I remember Julia Butterfly's stand in the protection of the great redwood. I think that if given the chance, these same people who applauded would take everything, because it gives them immediate gratification. But they are not thinking about their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren. And for heavens, they can't even conceive of seven generations down the line. There'd be nothing left if it was up to them. Look at what they've done so far. Look what they've passed on to their children. Rivers that catch fire. That their children have to wear oxygen masks during recess at lunch. This is what they're passing on to their children. Because they're like, you know, like McGame Pac-Man. It was one of the first video games, I believe, where this little creature went around and gobbled everything up. That's what they are. That's what they're like. Pac-Man. And they gobble everything up. Or a closer analogy would be like cancer, spreading over the earth like cells, growing in one place, absorbing the good, destroying it, destroying the place, and then finally turning on itself. I don't think that the United States of America has ever thought of seven generations down the road. I, you know, when we think about what's more important than the earth and sky, are they thinking seven generations down by thinking, well, we'll colonize Mars, you know, and the idea is that we'll get out, once we destroy this world, we'll be able to go on to that world. But they're going to destroy that world too, because what they've done here, they're going to do every place else. My wife and I had children because we chose to have children. It was our responsibility to have children, to pass on what was good about us as human beings, to pass on the beliefs that the dolphins had asked me about. What makes you so different? What makes us different? That the earth, we believe, is our mother. And this is what we pass on to our children. Because that's the only way we're going to have seven generations, is if each generation respects the earth as mother. And it doesn't look very hopeful now, but that's all in the mystery. And there's no way we can figure out this whole thing. We can only do what we can do. We can only take care of what we can take care of. We can't control what's happening all over the world. And so we teach our children, and we can't control them either, because they're going to go through the things of this world, all the things that distract them, that take them away from what is beautiful, good. We can only hope that everything we pour into them and believe will take root and continue to grow and will be passed on into their children. That's our responsibility. I don't know, seven generations is an incredible concept. That's why when Columbus landed here, he saw the beauty that he did. That's why the pilgrims, when they landed here, saw what they did. Because the people who lived here lived that way of life.
My heart is calm. Be water, sing, pray my morning song. My heart is calm. Be water, sing, pray my morning song.
Many hands join, make stronger the prayer. If someone is hungry, we always will share. If someone needs shelter, let's welcome them home. While living on earth, we should all walk as one. Many hands working, make life a task. No child's an orphan, they're part of a plan. Raising up strong hearts with generous spirits, each child's the future, our song they will sing. Hopeless is never the song that we sing. Defeated is never the message we bring. Empower the people by standing together. Hatred and fear will be banished forever. Lift up the people, together we keep hope alive. You look like my neighbor, your face says I know you. We stand in the struggle to strengthen each other. We're seeking justice, I do stand up with you. You're family to me, cause you want to be free. Survival is ours at the hand of our elders. Tradition, the gift given to us ever. Do not believe that we live without hope. Make your steps worthy and honor the earth. Hopeless is never the song that we sing. Defeated is never the message we bring. Empower the people by standing together. Hatred and fear will be banished forever. Lift up the people, together we keep hope alive. Hopeless is never the song that we sing. Defeated is never the message we bring. Empower the people by standing together. Hatred and fear will be banished forever. Lift up the people, together we keep hope alive. Lift up the people together, we keep hope alive. Lift up the people together, we keep hope alive.
A beautiful song entitled Song of Hope from the Thunderbird Sisters CD, Still Singing, which they sent me from the Shinnecock Indian Nation. You also heard the American Indian Movement's honor song following my first question to our program guest, Gabe Horn. Well, dear friends, unfortunately, we are nearing the end of our time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio. Next week, we continue my interview with my brother Gabe in Program 5 of our special series, Native Heart, A Conversation with Gabe Horn. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio on Radio for Peace International. RFPI is Global Community Radio. We conclude today's broadcast with American Indian Movement warrior John Trudell's song, Tribal Voice. Until the next Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinawan Takwasin, to all of our relations.
Listening to the voices of life, chanting in unison, carry on the struggle. The generations surge together in resistance to meet the reality of power. Mother Earth embraces her children and natural beauty to last beyond oppressor's brutality. As the butterfly floats into life, we are the spirit of natural life, which is forever. The power of understanding, real connections to spirit, is meaning our resistance, our struggle, is not sacrifice lost. It is natural energy, properly used. One time, I was visiting with my relatives. The clouds, the mountains, the sky, the trees. My relatives touched my spirit, nudged it lovingly. Listen to us, impatient one. We are forever. You must remember the gentleness of time. You are struggling to be who you are. You say you want to learn the old ways. Struggling to learn when all you must do is remember. Remember the people. Remember sky and earth. Remember the people have always struggled to live in harmony, in peace. Struggle against selfishness and weakness so the people may live as nations. The old ways are hard. The people have always had to work together. Remember, impatient one. Remember and live. Do not be afraid of truth. Respect, discipline, share your life so the people may live. Honor sky and earth. Honor yourself. Honor your relations. Remember, impatient one. The gentleness of time. Grandmother Moon, you are more than light in the night. You are more than the moon. You are spirit connection. Your energy is our life. You are memories to generations past. You are the creator of sensations. It will always last. You are the knowledge, the teacher, the influence to keep the people sane. You are a healer for spirit pain. Grandmother Moon, we love you, and we are angry at the invaders who trash you and violate our universe with their mechanical uncleanliness. We pray for you, for us, and for the invader who just can't comprehend respect, love, or the balance of life. We do not join the invading madness. From the way they act, it speaks of spirit sadness. Machine money progress is the cause of our common abuse. We see you, Grandmother. We feel you. We love you. We know through your reality, we will endure. We are one. We pray for you. We pray to you. grandfather is whispering in the wind. Rejoice at the life you are a part of. Natural energy bound to natural laws. You will survive this temporary madness imposed upon you. Natural life is longer than oppressor's illusionary insanity. Spirits experience human deeds but need not end. This is just one place of changes. Spirit life is forever if you want. The universe is your home. You can survive here. Do not let them kill you. Keep your spirit strong. For distant stars and distant drums are the memories of spirit infancy. Children of Earth, let the spirit live so you can grow in your place in the universe.